Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 2 to 3 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Youth Speaks Out is being funded by Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens, or HALT, a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start. The project is creating many alternative activities for teens in our community. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. Tonight's hosts are me, Patty, and
Janelle,
Brianna.
We all attend Laytonville High School. Tonight, our topic is fast food and the industry that profits from it. Fast food is, first of all, fast, cheap, and mostly unhealthy. So why do children crave it? It is estimated that each year, $1 billion is spent on media advertising to children, mostly on television. In addition, over $4.5 billion is spent on youth-targeted promotions such as premiums, samplings, coupons, contests, and sweepstakes. About another $2 billion is spent on youth-targeted public relations, such as broadcast and print publicity, event marketing, and school relations. In addition, roughly $3 billion is spent on packaging, especially designed for children. Most of this money was spent to promote highly processed, expensive, nutrient-poor food. Public interest groups have been trying for decades to limit junk food from advertising that specifically targets young children. While these actions have been mostly unsuccessful, we will hear a radio story from Massachusetts where parents got Kellogg's to limit their ads at school and on television. Locally, there are several school brunch and lunch programs that provide healthy meals at low cost to the students. In recent years, there have been numerous surveys showing a marked increase in percent of youth who could be classified as obese. Many people see a direct link to the fast food and junk food industry. Many people say that education is the way to improve the health of young people, yet there is little evidence that this can overcome the influence of advertising on children. Some say, let the buyer beware. We are responsible for what we choose. It took decades to get the tobacco companies to accept the fact that their products are unhealthy and to begin to limit their seductive advertising. In fact, they still deny that Joe Camel was a direct attempt to get children smoking. Given this history, it may seem hopeless to try to change the way junk food is advertised to children and adults. Yet within our community, we may be able to counteract some of the mass hypnosis about food. What do you think? We'll begin today's program by listening to a radio story from WBUR in Boston. Monica Brady Mayeru reports on a grassroots effort to limit junk food advertising to children. Here's the story.
There may soon be sweeping changes to the way companies are allowed to market junk food to children in Massachusetts. Yesterday, five food and beverage companies responded to Massachusetts Congressman Edward Markey's request that they adopt voluntary limits on ads aimed at kids. Meanwhile, a lawsuit filed by two Bay State families against Kellogg's for its marketing has led to sweeping reforms. WBUR's Monica Brady-Meyerov has more.
The Carlson household in Wakefield runs a healthy kitchen.
You hungry? Do you want an apple?
Sherry Carlson gives her 5-year-old daughter Paige an organic apple for a snack. She buys only organic food for her husband and three children. Sherry is also one of the plaintiffs whose lawsuit resulted in Kellogg's agreeing to adopt nutrition standards for the foods it markets to children. But none of that stops her daughter from demanding junk food when they're shopping.
She saw a product that she had never had. I can't say for sure. It was either Dora or Dragon Tales, something, some kind of fruit roll-up thing. I was like, no, I'm not getting that because I really dislike buying junk. And she had a complete meltdown. So it was interesting because she had never had the product, but she just saw the character and wanted it.
The tantrum made her think, what was influencing her daughter's choices? It didn't take long to figure out.
I just want to warn you, Mr. Krabs, we're always fashionably late.
SpongeBob is one of Paige's favorite shows. Sherry says her three children watch a lot of TV, and thus they see a lot of commercials.
Here's another candy one, one after the other. What is that one, Paige?
Fruit gummies.
Fruit gushers. Now, is there anything nutritional about fruit gushers? Not really.
Sugar, artificial color. Sugar, artificial color.
Children see about 31 ads on TV an hour, and until the age of 8, they don't know ads are trying to sell them something. Sherry decided the ads had become so frequent and the food they were pitching was so unhealthy, she wanted to do something to stop it, so she joined the lawsuit.
I'm doing my part, but corporations aren't doing their part. They're being very irresponsible. They're marketing very unhealthy products. It's a well-known fact that this stuff is bad for their health, and yet they're allowed free rein to market away.
One of the advocacy groups behind the lawsuit is the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. It's a small Boston-based group that's only 7 years old, but has taken on big corporations, such as McDonald's and now Kellogg's.
All social movements start small.
Susan Lin is a psychiatrist and the co-founder.
I see the commercialization of children's lives, which is a factor in so many of the problems facing children today, not just childhood obesity, but eating disorders, precocious sexuality, youth violence, that I think it really is one of the most important issues that we have to come to grips with as a society.
The campaign teamed up with the Center for Science in the Public Interest and threatened to file a lawsuit against Kellogg's. It chose Massachusetts because the state has some of the strongest consumer protection laws in the country. After a year of negotiations, Kellogg's agreed last month to voluntarily stop marketing foods to kids under 12 that don't meet certain nutrition guidelines for sugar, fat, sodium, and calories. It also agreed to stop using characters on products, such as putting Shrek on a box of Eggos. Then Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey took the effort one step further. He wrote to the top five food and beverage makers and asked them whether they would consider similar self-imposed regulations. Markey received the responses yesterday.
It basically is something that I find unsatisfactory because their commitments are vague, they're undefined, and they still leave an open question as to whether or not this children's marketplace will be protected against marketing of unhealthy foods to kids.
McDonald's, Pepsi, and General Mills said they will unveil new initiatives next week at a Federal Trade Commission meeting. They're motivated to make changes themselves because Markey and other members of Congress say they might regulate them if they don't. Susan Lin of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood says she wishes the government would step in.
One of the things about self-regulation is that a company can make a policy, but they can change it at any time. There's nobody holding them accountable for that. And if these policies that they're implementing aren't profitable, you can bet your life that they're going to be changing them.
The Massachusetts legislature is considering two new child consumer protection laws. One would require schools to sell only nutritious food and drinks. Another would ban all marketing to kids in schools. Representative Peter Katusian, co-chair of the Joint Committee on Public Health, says government has to make laws to protect children from ads.
We have our children in our schools for 6 or 8 hours a day. While they're in there, they're captive audience. And any of the commercialism, the marketing to our children, is a real direct assault on them.
Katusian says his bills have a lot of support, but Lynn says the power of the food industry is evident in the number of lobbyists it has on Beacon Hill.
One of the problems with a lot of the state bills is that these major food and beverage companies do have lobbyists and who do spend a lot of time and money doing everything they can to sabotage states that are trying to put in some protection for marketing to children.
Sherry Carlson, that mother of three in Wakefield and plaintiff in the Kellogg's case, would be relieved to see marketing curbed in schools because she's seen a lot of it in her kids' elementary school.
You know, once you realize it, you look around, you're like, I can't believe this. It's everywhere you turn. And then our food service director had a free giveaway for a bike. Unfortunately, it was the Coca-Cola logo on the bike, and no one notices.
But now these Massachusetts families, child advocates, and legislators together are turning the table on junk food makers and demanding more responsible marketing to children. For WBUR, I'm Monica Brady-Meyerov.
For sugar, sugar, and artificial colors and photos and links related to this story, go to our website, WBUR.org.
So once again, welcome to Youth Speaks Out. I'm Patty, and I'm here with Janelle.
And Brianna.
So this afternoon, we want to discuss fast food, junk food, and advertising aimed at children. We'll talk about our efforts in our communities to improve the nutrition of young people. We'll discuss these topics here in the studio for a while, then we'll ask you to join in on the phone. We're here at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be 456-9991. We will encourage everyone to join in the discussion in about 20 minutes. So let's begin by talking about what fast food is. Why is it unhealthy, and who should be responsible for the health of our children? Brianna, what do you think about junk food commercials?
Well, when we look at junk food commercials, there's a lot of things that we don't see. But when you look at it holistically, advertising is kind of the name of the game. I mean, Hoover advertises, you know, the suction of their vacuums. Toyota advertises the reliability of their cars. And McDonald's advertises their Big Macs. And there's always fallacies in each advertisement. So why is it different in the food industry than any other industry?
Well, I mean, in my point of view, I think there's a difference between, I mean, like, to a certain extent, advertising is made to suck people in. You know, they show these commercials that, you know, draw people's attention, make them look cool, you know, oh, I want to identify with this product, you know, is basically what advertising is. But there's a difference between, you know, the alcohol industry, you know, advertising to 21-year-olds or adults, and, you know, the fast food industries and the junk food industries advertising to little children, I think. In that radio clip we just heard, it said until age 8, children don't even know that commercials are trying to sell you something. So when they see the little Bugs Bunny or, you know, SpongeBob, you know, bounce across the screen and promote this product, they aren't even aware that, you know, it's advertising. They just are so heavily influenced by it that, you know, it's just there, in my opinion.
I have a 3-year-old nephew that was with us, and he has just started, you know, seeing things on commercials and saying, you know, I want that, and, you know, I want to have that. So, you know, as just like the lady in that news clip was saying, you know, he's going to be in the store, and he's going to see, you know, Dora the Explorer SpaghettiOs. And, of course, he's going to want that, not because, you know, he actually wants SpaghettiOs, but because it's being promoted by someone like Dora the Explorer that he identifies with so heavily.
Yeah, but when you look at it, I mean, how many 8-year-olds walk into Safeway and buy their own food? Their parents buy their food for it. So how long are we going to give parents a cop-out for why they aren't telling their kids, no, SpaghettiOs have 260 milligrams of sodium and tons of other things that are bad for them? The 8-year-old's not buying the food. The parents are. So when are we going to hold the parents responsible for what they're feeding their children?
Well, I think that... I think that's where the problem is we can't hold the parents responsible. In a perfect world, the parents will go and feed their kids healthy food. And in my opinion, proper parents do make sure that their kids aren't just getting bombarded with junk food all the time, you know, but I mean, it is in a perfect world. I mean, many parents out there, in my opinion, don't even deserve to be parents. You know, and so, you know, and that's more than just the food they buy their kids. That's just other mistreatments that, you know, I've seen in the past 18 years I've been alive. You know, and so I think that you're putting too much faith in parents. I think that although ideally it's great for parents to go and, you know, say, oh, buy this, you can't. You know, like, no one can go and say that, I haven't seen people, the government or anyone else, the community even, hold the parents responsible for what they're feeding their children.
That's really something that I think we need to start doing more, you know, is, expecting more of our parents, because if parents aren't responsible enough to see that their children, you know, eat better food, then I don't know if they should be responsible enough to even raise the children. And while I understand that, some parents really just aren't that responsible, I think that it's really important that everyone as a community and as a nation start to expect more from the parents, because I don't really see that kind of thing happening very often.
Well, I think that it's incredibly naive to expect parents who neglect their children in every other situation to all of a sudden say, oh, let me go buy you, nutritious food. But also what happens, like, take, for example, McDonald's. You know, they just held this huge campaign towards adults, and especially towards mothers and women, showing their salads, showing like, oh, here's a healthy thing to eat at McDonald's. Look at these salads. They're great. And it really was targeted towards older women, the mothers, people like that. And yet, if you look at the calories on it, there's more fat and more sugar in the salads than there is in, a Whopper at McDonald's, And so what happens when the parents believe the same things that the kids are believing,
I think in a lot of situations that, like, I just came back from Massachusetts, and all of the fast food corporations there, when you buy a Big Mac, the box that it comes in, on the very top, it doesn't say Big Mac. It has the nutritional facts there. And so I think if the information is accessible to people, they need to be held responsible for reading the information and intaking it. I mean, we can't regulate everything, but if people have the information, they should be able to use it.
All right. I don't know. I just seen, like, the newest McDonald's commercial, and it shows, like, a mother and her child, like, swinging on a swing, and it shows, like, this mother just caring for her child so much, and just totally loving her, and then all of the commercial says, if you care for your child, take her to McDonald's. That's really what the commercial, that's what it said, and so, like, what message are we sending out to parents? Maybe the parents should go and read the labels, but what happens if they don't see anything wrong with McDonald's? What happens if their, their guard isn't up? They don't know that McDonald's is all of a sudden really bad for you or whatever. They just know, if I love my child, I'm taking him to McDonald's.
Well, I agree that, having the nutrition labels in, easy to see places, I think that's, a really good thing to do. And I think all the, fast food industry should make that information available, and a lot of them do. But I think that the responsibility falls mostly on each individual, and not the government wholly, to make sure that you're eating healthy food.
Well, it shouldn't fall on the government. It should fall on the fast food companies.
But isn't it, every company is built to make money.
Yes. If you look at the economic side of it, if, McDonald's could make their food a lot healthier, but, if they're going to end up, spending a lot more money to get, real cheese as opposed to, processed chemicals that taste like cheese. And if they, make their food healthier, they're going to be, losing so much money that, the company as a whole isn't going to prosper and isn't going to put as much back into the economy. And as a result, a lot of people will lose their jobs. So you do, you have to, I'm not saying that McDonald's food, shouldn't be healthier, but you do have to, weigh the amount of, jobs or the economic side of it with the health of our children. And in that area, I think that, there are other ways than the companies changing that, children can be healthier. One example of that is their parents, feeding them healthier food. And I think that, that's the main solution to the problem.
Well, addressing the economics of it, I think you're only looking at one side. Because if we are feeding all these children a whole bunch of McDonald's, or a whole, not even McDonald's, I think we're just targeting McDonald's, but just junk food in general, Kellogg's, sodas, anything, that really is not healthy for them, there's a whole line of, the majority of children in the United States are obese, you know, and we're going to start reaping the consequences. Those are going to be the adults, you know, in 18 years or how, you know, more like 10 years that are going to be applying for, you know, the welfare and the, you know, the medical benefits because they, you know, they have all these problems from eating bad food. You know, they're either too big or they, you know, to be able to really go out and get a job, or, you know, they have too many health problems, you know. I mean, the healthcare system is way too expensive to go and, you know, be able to treat diabetes or anything like that, and that's going to fall onto the taxpayer's shoulders, you know. And so, like, it's, you know, it's bad in one way, but then it's worse in another way, you know. So that's another group of totally unemployed people who will be, you know, not even able to be a benefit to our economy.
I think where we need to start is just in educating our youth. And in, I mean, they showed that all the work they did on recreating the food pyramid and trying to teach our youth about how to eat healthy did nothing. But if we can find a way to teach our youth what is healthy and what isn't healthy in a better manner, then that's going to be the best way by serving healthy foods in our cafeteria and by teaching them what's healthy and what to eat and how to make, how to eat things on a low-income budget. Because I think that's really important with a lot of our youth and low-income families is that they can't afford to buy, you know, fresh vegetables and to buy healthy things from the store. All they can afford are the microwave dinners and things that come from a box.
How do you feel about the school lunches in our community? Do you think that they're, you know, healthy or that they have a long way to go to become better?
I think the problem with a lot of the school lunches is they, you know, like our school, they offer salads and things like that. But the problem is for kids, if they want any type of protein, if they want to eat a meat for lunch, what's offered is chicken nuggets, chicken or fish sticks, Hot Pockets. So what the government's looking at is they're saying, oh, these products don't have much sugar in them and they don't have much fat in them, but they have tons of carbohydrates and they have tons of sodium that are just as bad for our youth.
Right. Well, and also, I think that, but there has been progression in at least California's school lunch programs. Arnold Schwarzenegger did pass a law demanding that there be more fruits and vegetables put into the school lunches all across the California in public schools. And I personally have seen the effects of that. Like you did say, I have seen more salads, more options for vegetarians to come into campus.
There's healthy fruits and vegetables, but kids can't survive on an apple and a salad. Kids need protein. There's no healthy proteins offered. And that's part of the problem. And then, you know, the unions are so strong that, in our school, when a class wanted to sell smoothies for brunch, it was a huge deal because we were taking jobs away from our union. So what it's become is, you know, the unions are more concerned with the people, their workers, than they are with the health of our children.
Right. I know the same thing sort of happened in Willits. The Willits Charter School, I know, has a pretty decent, very good lunch program that the students go and make the lunches and then sell it to the students at lunchtime. And I know Willits High School tried to sort of replicate that program to a little bit, but the same thing happened. The unions wouldn't stand for children or, you know, kids trying to make their own food and making healthier food and that sort of thing.
Well, and they say it's taking jobs away from union workers, but when you really look at it in the long run, you're taking at maximum maybe in our school maybe 2 or 3 jobs away from union workers, but you're teaching 20 kids how to work in the food industry.
Well, but there also is an argument to say, I mean, the unions are established to protect workers' rights, you know? And so, like, I mean, there's arguments for and against, I mean, whether unions should be, you know, really influencing school lunches on that manner. But, like, I know, for example, like, if at our school we had, like, students making lunches or brunches instead of the cafeteria, you know, that gets rid of, you know, half the workday for, you know, like the two cafeteria ladies we have there, you know, and so all of a sudden their paychecks reduced in half, you know, and so like, I mean, that's really why unions are there, and I mean, I think there's argument both ways.
I just think our children are more important, you know, the people, like when we're talking about if our children grow up, they eat unhealthy foods, they're going to have diabetes by age 30, they're going to be on disability, and they're not going to be working and stimulating our economy. That's much worse for our economy than not having two workers work in the food industry, but possibly being able to find jobs elsewhere. Somebody that is ill from the way they've eaten their entire childhood isn't ever going to be able to hold a job, while if a food worker employee is laid off, they can possibly hold another job.
I think I have to agree with that point. Just the, you know, I think that the assumption that, you know, the few food employees that would be getting laid off, you know, couldn't find a job somewhere else, I think that's sort of a false assumption, because as Brianna was saying, it would be easier, you know, for them to find a job than for someone who, you know, has been eating unhealthily and now has, you know, a lot of serious medical issues to find a job.
Well, I sort of think that this whole problem, this whole topic, basically, the problem rests in who really is responsible. You know, should the fast food companies or, you know, all food product companies, you know, in general, make their food healthier to eat, you know, they're with less trans fats, you know, and hydrogenated oils, or, you know, or should we just, like, you know, try to evade those companies? Like, that's where the problem is. Who's responsible? Are we responsible or are the companies?
I think that on that subject, if, you know, enough people are really dissatisfied with the unhealthy quality of McDonald's food, then, you know, if they stop eating at McDonald's, then that will give the company, you know, sort of an independent incentive to make their food healthier. And I think that would be more effective than government regulation, because then the companies aren't going to be happy about it, and, you know, they're going to be dissatisfied with the government, and that would create a lot of new problems. But if they, you know, if they have an incentive to do it and they gain something from it, I think that would be, you know, a more progressive way to do it.
I think you're putting too much power in the people, though. You know, like, well, in sort of that way, like, take for example, like, food is very addicting, and McDonald's uses every single way to make their food as addicting as possible to get people to come back and to come back, you know, whether it's, you know, the fat in their French fries or the MSG or whatever, you know, they use addicting food. And, I mean, when people are addicted, they're addicted. Look at how many people have tried to quit cigarettes and have been unable to do it. You know, our whole country is based on addiction, you know, whether it's drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, or food, you know. And so, like, I mean, like, expecting people to be able to say, okay, even though I've had McDonald's, like, every day, you know, for the past 10 years, I'm not going to eat there anymore, is a lot. You know, you have to have a lot of motivation to do that. You know, and honestly, the reason why most people quit cigarettes is because they don't want to die. You know, it's bad for them. You know, so how are people just going to say, you know, all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to quit McDonald's?
Well, as a democracy, I think that it's the people's responsibility and their ability to decide what, you know, they as the, you know, working class individuals of our nation want to and don't want to eat. And if the majority of people, you know, are okay with the quality of food at McDonald's and they're still eating there and the company is still making money, then, you know, that's the majority of what the people in our nation want.
Yeah, I mean, it does disturb me that the entire trend of our nation is turning towards blaming someone else. We're always blaming someone else. It's, you know, it's McDonald's fault that they spilt hot coffee on themselves. It's somebody else's fault. And when are we going to make people take some responsibility, or at least attempt to make them take responsibility for their own actions? I mean, if we stop even making an attempt at trying to make them take responsibility for their own actions, then we fail wholly.
But I still think that it is definitely the company's fault when they are serving food that, you know, is cancerous 10 years down the road, or, you know, or does cause massive amounts of obesity in the population. You know, obviously some action needs to be made on in terms of that. I heard the American Heart Association has said that trans fat, people should only eat trans fat as much as 2 to 2.5 grams per day. An average French fry from McDonald's is 8 grams of fat.
I do think that, you know, with the McDonald's advertisements, with the, you know, advertising their food is healthy, I think that, you know, that is false advertising, in my opinion. And I agree that, you know, I think that should probably be limited because, you know, the McDonald's salads, you know, while it does contain lettuce and tomatoes and whatnot, their salad dressing is the thing that actually contains, you know, like as much fat as, you know, a cheeseburger there. So I think that there is a lot of false advertising going on, and that, you know, gives people the impression that they're eating healthy when they're really not.
Well, that is what, that's where the change needs to be made. And it's not really, I mean, whether or not, I've also been over to the East Coast, and I drove from Massachusetts all the way down to D.C. on the interstate. And every single place on the interstate was either McDonald's or, like, Chevron. Those were the two companies that totally monopolized the whole interstate. So, like, in that situation, all you had to eat was McDonald's, you know? And so what happens when people don't have a choice whether to eat McDonald's or not? You know, they can't say, okay, I'm not gonna eat here. You know, they actually have to eat there. Or, you know, there's people, like, there's certain schools that only have, you know, fast food companies as cafeterias at their schools, you know, in colleges and in high schools, you know? And so, you know, people don't have a choice, and all of a sudden they are eating this food that, you know, has all this trans fat and is, like, you know, is damaging to your body, and yet they don't have a choice. Are they still held responsible, even though they don't have a choice in that sense?
So far as I've noticed, you know, eating at McDonald's is very convenient. And I've eaten there sometimes, and, you know, it's horrible, and you shouldn't do it. But so far as I've noticed, you know, just in my personal experience, there, you know, if you try and if you really put the effort in, there are other places where you can eat. I haven't experienced, you know, any school cafeteria or anything where there wasn't a choice. But you just have to, you know, make the effort yourself to go out there and eat at some place that might be, you know, less convenient than McDonald's, but is healthier for you. And I think that's a personal responsibility.
But there's other places, like, applies to any fast food place or, you know, any junk food that you could buy in a grocery store. The junk food is the cheap stuff, you know, it's the stuff that people can afford to buy. You know, like when you get food stamps, all of a sudden you're buying macaroni and ramen, you know. And, I mean, that's not McDonald's, that's another option, but it's still just as bad for you as McDonald's or any fast food company would be.
But, I mean, in the long run, what else are people supposed to buy? Because McDonald's is selling the best meal they can at the cheapest price they can. So when they increase the quality of their product, obviously the price is going to go up, and then the entire class that survives on cheap, low-income food no longer has a source for it.
Well, I mean, there are other options besides McDonald's. I mean, go to a grocery store. You know, I mean, like, half the reason McDonald's is there is out of pure laziness. You know, the drive-through, the fast food. You know, people don't want to go and stop at someplace where they can get a more healthier meal because you can get, a Whopper in 5 minutes, you know, whereas it would take 20 to, you know, where it was actually cooked.
But right look there. Look at fresh produce. Look how expensive fresh produce is. A head of romaine lettuce in Laytonville is $2.39.
It's $1.15.
Oh, well, it's expensive. You can get an entire meal practically for what you're spending just to make a salad. Or, you know, buying anything fresh is so expensive now that people just they can't survive on buying fresh produce. They can't survive on buying, you know, the fresh meats and the fresh vegetables.
Well, you don't have to survive on buying that, but you can supplement it out. I mean, I grew up in a poor family. You know, my mother was one single mother, you know, me and my sister, and we still managed to get by without eating, you know, trans fats every dinner or, you know, something like that. We still, you know, we had to choose what we wanted to buy, organic or whatever, you know, but we were still able to make it through. And I mean, you know, we were poor as anyone else was.
I actually agree with that. You know, if you're willing to make an effort to eat a little healthier, even if you are low income, that you can do that. And I think that it's your responsibility to do that.
Yes. So we're going to open the phone lines now. The number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and the concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have any questions or insights about junk food advertising aimed at children or school lunch programs. Are people overly concerned with what they eat? Is it really bad to allow children to eat high sugar, low nutrient cereal before they go to school? Have you ever seen a child throw a fit in a store because a parent won't buy them the product they've seen advertised on Sunday cartoons? The phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion. We'd really like to hear from you.
One of the positive things that I've noticed about Laytonville High School is that we stopped offering caffeine drinks like soda in our vending machines, and now there's, you know, water and juice, and there's Gatorade, which, you know, does have a lot of sugar, but at least it doesn't have that caffeine in it, which, you know, is really not good for you.
Yeah, but honestly, like, when you go back to it, I don't understand why we are offering anything other than water and juices. We're offering Minute Maid lemonade, we're offering Gatorade, that, you know, the entire content is terrible for you, but we're selling it because the Gatorade is what sells.
Well, actually, technically, there's more sugar in juices than there are in sodas. So, I mean, we shouldn't be offering juices at all at school. Right. You know, if we stop offering sodas, it's just as bad to be offering juices.
Well, I think that, you know, while juice does have a lot of sugar, it also doesn't have the caffeine that soda has, which caffeine, you know, is really addicting. And if kids are drinking it all day at school, then they're, you know, as Patty was saying, you know, they can get addicted to it and then they'll crave it at home. And soda actually is one of the leading causes of obesity in America.
Caller, you're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Danny asked me to call in. I'm the director of the charter school, and I wanted to talk a little bit about our food program, our culinary arts program.
Okay.
And we'd love to hear that.
Pardon me?
We'd love to hear that.
Okay. Luckily, when we moved into our building, it had a commercial kitchen in it. So since the beginning, we've had culinary arts as part of our curriculum. So the students are helped with cooking the brunch and the lunch. And then after lunch, there's usually a baking class, and they'll do things like make cookies or do prep dough, things like that for the next day. And I think through the whole program, what's happened is that a lot of students have taken a whole different interest in cooking. And I think we even have a few students who will go on and make culinary arts a profession. So that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad that, you know, that program is helping students learn a life skill that they need and, you know, even may help them, you know, find out what they want to do with their lives and what they want to do for a profession.
Right.
I have a question.
Okay.
Do you have an open campus where you can, you know, go off campus to go eat lunch?
Yes. It's open for lunch. It's not open for brunch. So the kids do, if they want to eat something for brunch, they need to buy it from our kitchen.
So do you find that do the majority of kids eat the lunch that you guys cook at the charter school, or do they go off campus?
I would say about 40% eat there, about 40% go off, and about maybe 20% bring their own lunch.
Okay.
So I think that's probably pretty, it goes up and down depending on what's for lunch. We have things like fajitas. We always have a fresh salad bar. We buy a lot of organic produce. Usually there's this fresh-made soup. We don't buy anything that's pre-made. So everything the students make, like they'll make the pizza dough and then they'll make pizza. We do a lot of grilling. We have a grill, so they grill chicken, make teriyaki, that kind of thing.
I was just about to ask about the quality of the food, and it does sound like it's very healthy.
I think it's tastier than other food. I think that we probably still use a little too much cheese, and to me that's a little too much fat for kids, but I think overall we try to look at it as having a balanced nutrition
mm-hmm.
and not doing it too much in the white flour, white sugar, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you provide vegetarian options?
Yes, we do.
Oh, great.
We do.
Well, it's really great to hear that something's happening.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Bye.
Once again, I'd like to remind everyone that the number is 456-9991. Please call in if you have any comments on fast food and any other topic we're discussing.
I think that it's really great for me to hear, such an example of a positive thing that is happening within a small community. And I think that, each community changing a lot of their, programs and trying to make the food nutritional for the children in their community is a really good thing. And I think it's very positive.
I think, though, that I think we should also focus on the education that needs to be provided. Teaching kids that there's a different option, for example, in the charter school, although they did have an option that was healthier than, fast food or, junk food, it didn't seem, 60% of the students didn't eat it, and so, although it was there, I think that if there was more outreach, or any other sort of community-based level thing, that more people would join in and eat. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm really glad to hear you talking about this issue, and I was especially glad that you brought up the fact that so many low-income families don't feel they can spend money on foods that will cost them more. Given that about 30%, I've just found out, of low-income Californians can't afford adequate food for their families consistently, and that 30%, well, the figures show that it's mainly African-Americans and Latinos are the groups that have the highest incidences of obesity as a result of some of this. So it sounds like you might have been addressing this a little just now, and I didn't hear it, about society's responsibilities to look at these disparities. And I'll just listen to you on the air. Thanks.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about is that economically, kids that if you spur an interest in culinary arts, like in high school, it's much cheaper to go to school, like a culinary arts school, than it is to send a child to college or to try to have them get a degree in another profession.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should really focus on answering that last caller's question, though. Like, how can society, how can we challenge society to make a difference? What can, each individual, one of us, do in terms of eating correctly?
I think an important thing would be to, in society now, there's really a focus on, it's cool to eat, this kind of food. It's cool to eat French fries and pizza. But if we sort of try to change that into it's cool to eat things that are healthy for you and, you know, won't make you sick. I think that that would be a good way for society as a whole to sort of change the way we eat and how that affects our health.
I think it really, maybe it shouldn't, but I think it really does lie in the people. I think we can't rely on corporations to do what we see as right, because reality is that they're not going to. And so it's the people's responsibility to say, we want healthier options, and we're not going to eat from your company until we get healthier options.
I think that really falls in the responsibility of the parents, too. You know, especially with the youth, you know, teach your kids how to eat right, you know, because, like, those are the skills that they'll need for the rest of their lives. Caller, you're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
I'm down in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I'm a long-time person teaching all the things you're discussing, and I'm wondering if you folks know about the great little school up in Davenport, 12 miles north of Santa Cruz on Highway 1.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, you want to check out their program there, because for years now it's been being designed by the principal, Sharon Smith, and the lady who runs it, Stephanie, and they've got the kid, and it's a public school, Pacific Elementary School in Davenport. They have the kids growing all the food in the garden there and then teaching them how to use it and cook it and why they eat that way and what's good for them and so on.
That sounds great.
Yeah, they've got a great pioneer project. And up at UCSC in the Sustainable Living Program, I just called these ladies and gave them your number because you want to hear from more young people. A lady named Sarah and Amy that are teaching in that program, one of the whole divisions of sustainable living is agroeconomics and bringing the right foods to the kids in schools, and they're running it, and I've left their number for you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because it's this sustainable living program at UC Santa Cruz. So these are great contacts of people doing, you know, all this outreach work, and one is a great pioneer project.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your great broadcast.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
I think that caller brought up an interesting point of people growing their own foods and learning how to use those foods, because, like, our family has our own garden, and then we also raise different animals like chickens for their eggs. And truly, it's much more, it's way more affordable to own an own a chicken, where it's, you know, maybe a couple dollars to buy it as a baby, and it's $5 for feed for, you know, months, and then you never have to buy eggs. Or it's much cheaper to plant a tomato plant in your garden that's, you know, $3 and grow it the entire year, and then save the tomatoes and make salsa or use the tomatoes in salads.
And also addressing what that caller said, Laytonville Elementary School actually does grow food. And I know when I was in the elementary school, we used to cook it in soups and stuff, like the students used to. And, you know, and we sort of had, like, you know, every class had a little garden bed, and you grew your own, you know, you grew your own food. And, like, at the end of the year, we'd have a whole party and stuff. So, I definitely think that, like, these sort of outreach programs are pretty cool. And also, you know, just, you know, a sustainable, you know, farm is, you know, really probably the, you know, your own farm-raised goods, you know, whether it's beef or chicken or milk or whatever, is the best way to eat anything anyway. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I think you guys have a good show, but I think you're a little off base. I think that parents take their kids to McDonald's and Taco Bell and pizza because they don't really care about nutrition. They want convenience.
I actually agree with that. And McDonald's, you know, is very convenient, and people just end up eating there.
It's convenient. The kids are happy. If people stop going there, they wouldn't be in business anymore, but that's not going to happen because it's the fast and easy thing to do.
So do you have any suggestions of how how we could make parents more concerned about the health and less concerned about the convenience?
I don't think you can actually make parents be any more concerned about their children than they are. Either they will be concerned about their nutrition or they won't.
Oh, okay.
And McDonald's and those large corporations are easily targets for America's obesity problems, but the problems are the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I agree. I also think that caller had a great point in that, you know, I keep thinking, you know, like if I had a kid to a certain extent and, you know, it threw a fit about wanting to go to McDonald's or wanting to eat like this candy bar or whatever, you know, or even if I was babysitting the kid or something, I'd rather give it to him than deal with the yelling and the screaming and, you know, and so that really is a point of view that, I think is highly relevant and just might not be great to really talk about and say, and like it's sort of better, you know, to believe it doesn't exist, but it really does, you know. I think a lot of people just don't want to deal with it.
I have a question for you, caller.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that parents should be as concerned about unhealthy food as they are about tobacco?
I think they should be more concerned about tobacco than what their kids eat.
Okay.
But it's the same thing. If kids grow up eating junk food, they're going to be overweight and they're going to have health problems when they get to be older. Kids grow up and they have parents who smoke, they end up smoking and they have health problems when they get to be older. They have health problems when they're young.
So you think that both issues do result in serious health problems sometimes?
Yes.
Okay.
But I would say the tobacco issue is more of a concern than what the children are eating.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much for calling.
Well, I think another interesting point that we haven't really brought up is sort of the care that goes into the animals, especially that the animals that fast food companies use.
I know, like, just from dry, I mean, this isn't necessarily fast food, but overall, if you drive through Ferndale, north of California, you pass the crates that they keep veal in, and the calves are born. They never see sunlight. They aren't even able to stand up, and then 2 weeks into their lives, they're slaughtered. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge thing with any meat product, is that, like, the reason that McDonald's meat is so cheap is because it's not Angus. It's not, you know, typical meat breeds of cattle. It's dairy cows that are too sickly or don't produce milk anymore.
I mean, they've modified chickens now to not have feet, feathers, or beaks, you know, so they're basically just like this whole meat sack, you know, that you can chop the head off to, you know, when you're ready to, you know, butcher them. And so, you know, never see sunlight. So, like, obviously, like, you know, the treatment of these animals, I think, definitely goes to the unnutritious, you know, value they have as being food. Caller, you're on the air.
All right, it's Karen again in Santa Cruz. I just wanted to make a couple points about what that previous caller said, because I think the place you want to hit and target is you educate the corporations, McDonald's and those chains that people are committed to going to, because that has worked in the past.
Well,
that place is now, and of course it's not organic, they're not perfect. You can actually get salad bars there now, though. Because, see, I'm much older, and I'm one of the pioneers in the Western world of the food, natural food movement, which was a big start in Santa Cruz. And when I can tell you the difference, you know, what's happening out there, the more responsive approach is to go also to the taxpayers and make them aware of what the diabetes among kids is costing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be people, the working force right now is going to grow up without Social Security or any health insurance, because the whole system's going to be busted because of how poorly these children are eating and all these diseases. And I think the food is primary way over tobacco, because when you eat right and you feel good, you probably aren't so apt to smoke anyway. You know what I mean? It's like the balance point, and it's the beginning. And it creates a system of, you know, our bones up to make us strong and have good thinking and so on. It's the foundation of life. You know, that's what people need to remember we eat for is energy, right. You know, to keep us alive. And one more thought. I just shared it. I have a foot injury. I'm working with a foot specialist down here. And mm-hmm. I was addressing with this world-class Dr. Abidi, how are we going to educate these kids to, if they get diabetes, the truth is their limbs are going to come off. Mm-hmm. And we were talking to some of the people there, like, what if, again, as an outreach program, you young people go into the schools like John Robbins and all these people that are training how to teach this information, and you take limbs with you, and you start showing the kids the figures and what it would be like, or even the compression socks. Make them try to put one on.
Well, caller,
treatment.
I agree with you to a certain extent, but, I mean, sort of the same thing applies with tobacco. I mean, I've seen what a smoker's lung looks like, you know, and my whole class has, and half of them smoke.
Early, though, and the habits are developed early. Of course, a tobacco should still be highly, you know, big informational program.
No, I'm not. It's
different when you're healthy.
I know, I understand that. I'm just saying that, like, that sort of method, you know, I think we need to approach it a different way. It's old, you know, like,
right.
we've seen, you know, black lungs and, you know, the tobacco.
You've taken the artificial limbs in.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work, in other words.
No, I mean, like, I've seen it. It still hasn't stopped half my class from smoking, you know.
I wonder, though, have any of the kids your age been having diabetes and amputations?
No. Because, we have,
you know,
some diabetes.
Seeing the figure rise, even teenage death from diabetes, let alone losing a limb. That's all from eating wrong. That's all that is.
Okay.
Anyways, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts tonight have been me, Brianna,
Janelle,
Patty.
Thank you to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett studio. Youth Speaks Out is grateful for support from HALT, Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens. HALT is a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start program. The project is creating many alternative activities for teens in our community. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website at www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of August. That's August 26th at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.
We would also like to say thank you to Corners of the Mouth for underwriting this program.